Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. Crit effects can be tricky. Remember that they are chosen after defense tokens are spent, but before damage is applied. When they take effect can vary, as some modify how damage is taken, and some are immediate. But your opponent always gets to spend defense tokens before your crit effect, so an overload pulse won't exhaust their tokens before they have a chance to use them. As a final reminder, it's now ruled that XX9s and the standard crit effect don't stack with Fire Control Team, so you only get 2 face-up cards instead of 3. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 19th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. Hey, look! A Corellian campaign update article. I'm just going to touch briefly on this so we can get on with the show, but those are some nice-looking squadrons. I'm hoping for a bit more with the remaining Rebel squadrons, because so far the edge is going to the Imperials. The new Bomber Ace being a mini-Home 1 that you can just park next to flotillas, and the TIE Fighter Ace with 3 black dice that you can't kill until everyone around him dies? Those are fantastic, and nothing I see so far on the Rebels matches that. That doesn't mean I'm not looking forward to running a Death Star Trench Run reunion tour list with Biggs, Wedge, Luke, and Dutch alongside Gallant Haven. And Shara Bay is going to make everyone nervous about taking a shot at her. Plus, we now know what the snipe keyword is for on those E-Wings. Cornhorn's Snipe 4 is going to be pretty sweet on the table, I think. But Saber Squadron, hiding in the back with Howlrunner, will also be a force to be reckoned with. Sadly, it looks like the campaign will be out in late November, so with the holidays, I'm probably not going to be running it until January. But I am very excited to get my hands on that campaign. Now, let's get back on track from that break with some fire spray talk. Last week, I talked about the YT-2400 as being the best standalone squadron the Rebels can field, and the fire spray is the same for the Empire. Fire sprays are solid workhorses for any situation. They have a solid speed 3 with an excellent 6 hull, so you can count on them to get where they're going, and likely survive the experience. They have 3 blue dice to attack squadrons, and that's solidly average. Normally, having blue dice to attack ships isn't very good, but on the fire spray, we make an exception. The reason for this is due to 2 factors. One, there's 2 of those blue dice, and that both ups the odds for doing damage and might get you a nice accuracy result. And 2, the fire spray is a bomber. With 2 blue dice and bomber, as long as you don't roll the dreaded double accuracy, every face of the blue die will work for you. It's mainly that anti-ship ability that makes the fire spray so attractive. Well, that and Rogue. Just like the 2400, the fire spray can run itself, leaving you with more flexibility in orders and allowing your ships to focus on destroying other ships. The fire spray obviously focuses in more on making bombing runs, though. But it does have some downsides. They are a pricey 18 points, and yes, the 2400 is a close 16, but personally, those 2 points make for an odd tipping point into being very expensive. Maybe it's that you can fit one more 2400 into 134 points than you can fire sprays. Maybe it's just a gut feeling on my part, but there you go. Plus, with how cheap Imperial squadrons are as opposed to the average Rebel squadron, maybe that has something to do with it too. Their 3 speed is good, but they're not going to be able to keep up with faster ships, which can be a problem for a bomber-focused squadron. With that double-die attack, fire sprays can put serious damage into smaller ships with their lower shields and less hull, and that's really attractive, but keeping up with them once they hit their higher speeds is problematic. To combat this, you'll need to coordinate when the fire sprays should attack the target with when your ships will. You should really be doing this anyway, but I figure with the fire sprays running on their own so much and not having a super high speed, it might be a good reminder to have. Or You could just attack slower ships. It's your call. One of the most common things you'll see fire sprays used for is as a replacement for TIE bombers with Reimer, turning the Reimer ball into the fireball. The reasons for this are obvious. Fire sprays are better overall at shooting both ships and squadrons, though you can't fit as many into a list as you can bombers. Like all bombing squadrons, they really like having intel around, so keeping a Jumpmaster or Dengar handy helps them a lot too. They're average at everything, and above average at bombing runs. Plus, they run on their own, so if you're looking for a ship to go all in on as an Imperial, look no further than the Fire Spray. Their ace is Boba Fett, the most popular character ever to be killed by accident. Slave 1 sports the same base stats as a Fire Spray, with the addition of two braces, an extra blue die versus fighters, and changing a blue for a black against ships. He also adds his ability that puts a damage onto a ship or squadron that is at distance 1 when he activates, which situationally can be a big deal. All that boosts his cost up to a whopping 26 points. That makes him as expensive as Han Solo, and the top of the heap for most pricey. Obviously, if the Fire Spray was average at everything, Fett is even better. His upgrades are all pretty self-explanatory, but I want to talk a bit about his ability. First, since it goes off at the beginning of his activation, if there's nothing around, it doesn't do any good at all, so Boba actually benefits from the occasional squadron activation to get the jump on something you want to hit with it in the second round. Second, if it goes against a ship, your opponent gets to choose what arc the damage goes on, just like taking a debris field hit. Don't expect to snipe any ships with it unless it's down to its last hull with no shields. Third, that damage doesn't care about escort. You can certainly use it to drop escorting fighters that much faster, but if there's a target you need to whittle away, Fett will help you out. Finally, while you can use it to put the last damage on a squadron, or on something else otherwise untouchable because of scatter, don't discount using it on your own fleet. Right now, the only thing that benefits from taking damage is Bosk, but there could be other things later. Bosk works best as a ship bodyguard, so hitting him for a point of damage before zipping off to engage fighters and bomb ships in the first round may be a good idea for you. Now, Boba Fett's upgrades aren't as beneficial as you might think. Specifically, while a black die is a better damage dealer than a blue die, it's not as reliable. You're always going to get a result on a blue die, even if it's an accuracy, while the black die has two blank sides instead of those two accuracies. So while you might do more damage over time, you still have the same odds of doing absolutely nothing at all with blue-black as you do with blue-blue. Because of that, Boba Fett really benefits from a Gazanti with Bomber Command nearby. Getting that reroll is nice in general, but in his case, it keeps his damage output nice and high. Just like the regular Fire Spray, he also likes having intel around to keep his attacks on ships, but he's so good at killing squadrons that it's not as necessary. Personally, I like using him alongside IG-88, since Iggy can assassinate key figures, and if he comes up a little short, Fett can finish them off. He also works well alongside other auto-damagers like Soon Tir Fel and Mauler Mythyl, so that you pinpoint a target with a little extra damage when you need to and get them off the battlefield. He's pricey, but he'll get the job done, especially if you don't care about disintegrations. If you want a solid addition to a bombing run fighter wing, Boba Fett's your man. After the break, back to objective talk with Intel Sweep.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back. And let's do the Intel Sweep. Intel Sweep is probably the most consistently smash-mouth blue objective. Minefields and superior positions might not offer any alternatives for points other than killing one another, but Intel Sweep gets you right into your opponent's face to win. When should you put it in your list? First thing you'll need is at least one ship with greater than speed 2 to be your objective ship. If your picked ship tops out at 2, you're probably not going to get to that third token. That faster ship doesn't have to spend the whole game at 3, really it only needs one or two turns at that speed, but you definitely want to get a jump on the competition. Other than that, you have a lot of leeway in what else will work. As long as you can either defend your objective ship or defend a fixed point, you should do well. More on that next. How do you use it? There's basically two ways to set up for intel sweep, and basically two proven strategies for it. That doesn't mean you can't do it another way, just that these are both proven. The first setup is to run the tokens along your own setup area. This is the best, safest way for you, since enemy ships have to come across the board to intercept, and you don't. As second player, you get to place 3 of the 5 tokens, so if you can get away with this setup, do it, and you should hopefully coast to an easy 75 VPs. However, your opponent will likely spoil this plan by placing their first token somewhere in the middle, making it closer to them and easier to block you off. Because of this, you'll either most likely end up with an arrangement of tokens that is either X-shaped, with a token towards each corner of the setup area and one in the middle, or one that's sort of V-shaped, if enough room was left for each player to set up 2 tokens heading for the final one. That setup is where your biggest choice in strategy falls. If the first setup comes in, you're pretty golden. Run your objective ship along your deployment zone and run interference with your other ships. If that's the X or V setup, well, things get a little hectic. The main thing you need to do in this situation is decide whether you're going to run a race or a demolition derby. Running a race means you're going to focus on beating your opponent to 3 tokens. Demolition derby means you're going to focus on trashing their fleet and destroying their objective ship. Either way, to execute your strategy, you need to identify the choke point on the board. This is the place where you can stop your opponent from getting that crucial second or third token, and you'll want to vigorously defend it. In the X setup, the choke point is the center point. Each of you have 2 others in your home field that are more readily accessible, so the race and the fight is going to be over getting to that one first. Position your non-objective ships to cover it, place your fighters around it, and let slip the dogs of war. Remember that all you need to do is get more tokens than your opponent, so if you take that point and keep them to only getting 1 token, your ship only needs that middle one, or the other one in your home field if you're feeling tricky, to score those 75 points. In the V setup, you can try to hold one of the more center points, but the obvious one is to snag the vertex point. A very capable list for this is a 3-ISD list. One ISD moves at speed 3 along the deployment, picking up the other 2 tokens, while the other 2 just sit on that third point. It's unlikely that the objective ISD can be brought down before it gathers the 3 tokens, and if it is, your opponent probably went all in on destroying it, so the other 2 ISDs can just accelerate and slam into the vulnerable flank of the opposing formation. What I'm illustrating here is that the basic game plan is to hold the vertex while your objective ship comes to it, or in a demo derby, start there and go head on down the V. Now, you can get fancy and try to start your objective ship there and go out from it, or in the X situation, try cutting across into enemy territory, and those can be surprising and viable maneuvers, but you really shouldn't try them on your first sweep. Intel sweep is a crazy objective, but the 2 basic strategies work just fine. It's one of the most difficult missions to get down because of variations in enemy fleets and deployments, but also one of the most thrilling for me because it's almost always exciting. So, everything above is assuming that you have at least 1 or 2 heavy-hitting ships in your list. But what if you're running a swarm of smaller ships? In that situation, you're giving up the ability to hold a point, but you're gaining speed and agility that you can likely use to intercept and destroy their objective ship, giving you more wiggle room for how you use yours. It might be a little tempting to do a kind of Death Star trench run with your swarm, letting some ships screen your objective ship and taking the fire for it, but that's a sucker's bet. Remember, how many fighters were lost in that run? And that 75 points probably isn't going to win you the game, especially if a good chunk of your own fleet went down getting them. Doing a swarm list means you're probably going to be playing the mission more, but speed and skill are going to win the day. It doesn't matter how many ships are piled up on a point, when you've wiped out their objective ship before it can get a second token, and then your fleet swings around behind and hits and runs one ship in their vulnerable aft, bringing it down before running for it. As long as you know you can take them down without significant losses to you, playing for a tie with a swarm isn't the worst thing. Or hell, playing for a tie with any fleet. 75 points isn't much when you've tabled them, especially now that the MOV caps at 400. There's a lot of variation to any game of intel sweep, and I'm just trying to cover as much as I can in a few minutes. So when should I choose it from my opponent? There's a bit more flexibility on this side, namely that you can choose it if you have a fast ship as before, but you can also take it if you're confident in the power of your fleet to stop theirs dead in their tracks. Again, 75 points isn't going to break the bank if you're pretty sure you can destroy most of their fleet, plus they might be splitting up their fleet to send off a token runner, making a fight even more lopsided in your favor. They put it in their list because they know that their fleet will be good at it. You don't have to pick it because yours is. Just be sure that your fleet can get those anti-ship VPs. You only place two of the tokens, and that puts you into using yours as a spoiler. Your first placement will determine the layout of the rest of the tokens, so be careful. It's like a game of tic-tac-toe, where your opponent goes first, and your first move determines where they're going to pursue their strategy. Placing one of your tokens towards the midline between deployment zones will keep your opponent from putting one near to their side in that area, and probably determine whether it be more of an X or a V type placement. Pick the one that's right for your game plan, same as I talked about before, and let the other tokens fall where they may. That formation determination is the most effect you're going to have on the setup, and it's pretty sizable. Just remember that you also need to know where the choke point will be and deploy accordingly. Then, as long as you have a game plan like I outlined before, you're off to the races, or the demolition derby, as it may be. Intel sweep is a tricky objective, and it's one of those that takes a lot of practice to get right. You really should put that time in, though, as it's not picked a lot at tournaments, so you can really surprise an opponent by choosing it. And while those 75 points probably won't change a game's outcome, they can really help in running up the score for a higher MOV, and therefore more tournament points. It's also just a really fun one to play, so I'm sad that it doesn't come up more. That's it for this show. Next time, I'm going to power through and finish off the blue objectives with dangerous territory and superior positions, and hopefully get in a rogue or two so I can start talking wave 4. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Anything you want to say that's special for this episode, Admiral?
Happy Halloween!
Fire when ready. A Star Wars Armada podcast can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.